we have a guest, as we waste time yammering about the Queen. We should talk to Deborah Atlas. She has written a book taking a different sort of perspective on depression. Is that correct, Deborah?
Yes, it is.
Now, Deborah is formerly of Reading, now of Texas, I should point out.
Yes.
And I would assume that the last few years have been very hard on people's mental health.
They have. When COVID hit and lockdown started, people lost their routines. They lost their everyday way of doing things, and their colleagues at work and the kids from school. And it was the impact of it was just incredibly hard for everyone. Depression went way up because of it.
How many Americans are estimated or believed to suffer clinical depression?
Let me answer it this way. More than two-thirds of the people who suffer from depression are not diagnosed.
And what's the difference between clinical...
whatever figures there are higher than that.
What's the difference between clinical depression and being bummed out occasionally?
Good question. I'll explain it by an answer that a former therapist gave me. People who have the blues, who are very, very sad, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. People who suffer from depression, it doesn't look like that or feel like that. And you don't know when it's going to hit, and you don't know when it's going to end.
So there doesn't seem to be an identifiable trigger to this depression, these bouts of depression?
That's a different question. The answer is yes, but a lot of times people who suffer from depression don't know it. And one of the things that I talk about a lot in the book is being able to start recognizing the things that trigger you, starting to be more aware of what's happening. For example, you know, we have, all of us have our perception of things, what we think things mean when they happen. We all have that. It's a human thing. But when you suffer from depression, when something happens, you have a perception of what that means, and that triggers you. It can trigger you big time. And if you're not aware of that can happen, you go straight over the edge into depression. I talk a lot about that in the book and how to begin to recognize what I call the edge of depression, so that the more you're aware of that it exists, and then the more you're aware of what happens to trigger you, you can begin to see that maybe you can step back from that edge instead of falling over automatically.
There is a difference between depression and bipolar, correct?
No, bipolar is a form of depression.
Okay, so that's still considered part of what you're talking about.
I talk in the book, there's a chapter in the book, I tried to make the book as readable and as understandable as possible, keeping jargon down, keeping technical stuff down. I do have a chapter in the book where I talk about the different kinds of depression, and I explain what those are. And I also talk about how there's no one way to treat it, because everybody's different. Everybody's depression is different. So that's why I talk about the different options that people have. And truthfully, you know, I've had depression since maybe age 2, but I wasn't diagnosed till my mid-40s. And after that, I tried different things. I've tried therapy, and ultimately therapy was the right thing for me once I found the right person. I tried medications. It took a few different medications before I found the one that worked. But boy, let me tell you, when I did, life opened up. It was like a light bulb went off in my life. But everyone's different. And so I talk about the different options, the different possibilities.
And obviously a lot of people try to deal with depression by self-medicating. Is that correct?
It is. And that's another thing I talk about in the book is that, and I went back to my former therapist and he gave me some insights that I had never thought about, that addictions are related to depression. people's using drugs, it's another form of self-medicating, so they don't have to feel the pain of depression.
Deborah, did you walk into another room because you're all of a sudden really scratchy?
No, I'm sitting in the same place.
Oh, that's better. Okay. It fixed itself. I'm sorry. Go on.
You must have scratched.
Must have. Yeah. Must have. So, what was the question again?
You were talking about the different kinds of depression.
And treatment.
And different treatments.
Exactly. You know, I had clinical depression. I didn't have bipolar. I didn't have, you know, all the other different kinds that I mention in the book so that people can begin to recognize where they are on all that spectrum.
Are there signs that you can see in children so people can identify whether they think their kids may have an issue with depression rather than just, typical, you know, kid angst.
Teenage angst, yeah. It's torture regardless.
Teenage angst. Yeah. No, and in fact, since COVID hit, the rate of depression in kids has majorly spiked. I can tell you from my own experience that one of the big things to watch for is kids who are spending so much time by themselves. They spend time in their room. They listen to sad music. They don't want to interact with people anymore. They don't do the things that they always used to do, the fun things. That's a big red flag. Big red flag.
And, of course, the worst end to depression would be suicide.
Yes. And I am one of those who attempted it at 14. Being a teenager is probably the roughest thing in the entire world to go through, and 14 is probably the worst.
Is there any difference, do you think, between boys and girls?
Explained that to you, Clark.
Yes.
The difference is we have to have the talk again.
There's that, Clark. But yes, women, young girls, yes, there are higher rates of depression. I don't know it's higher rates of suicide, but definitely higher rates of depression.
Okay. I'm sorry, but you can go back to just the teenage aspect of it. I didn't mean to jump into that.
No, it's fine. You know, for me, you know, one thing about people who attempt suicide, the key thing is that the pain gets so bad and it becomes such a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness that, you know, when you're in depression, it's like this cloud descends and you get tunnel vision. You cannot see anything else, nothing. And even though you know the sun is shining, but for you, it's gray, dark, damp, horrible, everything like that. And there's nothing nobody can say anything to show you it's better than that. At least they can try. But for me, something happened. And it was, for me, the last straw. And I realized in the moment it was helpless. I was helpless. It was hopeless. There was nothing I could do that was going to make any difference in this. It was always going to be that way. And that's the thinking. It's always going to be that way. And when the pain gets that bad, suicide feels like the only option. And fortunately for me, I had two girlfriends who happened to call me right after I had tried to take my life. And because of that, I'm still here and I'm so ever grateful.
Well, despair, I guess, is the loss of all hope, isn't it?
Well,
yes.
Your book is called You Aren't Depression's Victim. Do a lot of people feel like they just don't have any control over it whatsoever, that they're totally at the mercy of their depression?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. You know, there's a lot of information out there about depression, but a lot of it is very depressing. I hate to say that. But my book offers people practical strategies, outside-the-box thinking and looking at things differently than they might have before to begin to see options that had never occurred to them. And it takes them step by step through this whole thing. At the end, people have really come up with their own strategies that'll work for them. You know, you can tell somebody till you're blue in the face, well, do this, this, and this. Doesn't make any difference.
Well, just be
but
happy.
When they come up with it. Yeah, sure.
Well, can't you
right.
just be uh-huh. happy? Be right. happy about stuff.
Cheer up. Walk on the brighter side of the street.
Cheer up. Exactly. I heard all those platitudes growing up, everyone. And the truth is, the other thing people don't realize is that people who suffer from depression often are masters of disguise.
Mm.
Many times, you would never know. You would never know that they are depressed. I grew up looking on the outside, from the outside. I was a happy kid. I was involved in things, but not me. I was a mess. And we didn't have the language then about what depression was. I lived in a small rural town in South Texas, and it wasn't talked about. And we didn't know anybody that had depression, so we didn't know, the family didn't know to look for these red flags. But they were there. They were always there.
Yeah, there is kind of a stigma, huh? There is, Uncle Harley, he's depressed all the time kind of thing, rather than realizing right. it's something we should be a lot more cognizant of and helpful with.
You know, even as recently as 10 years ago, when you have all these medical forms that you have to fill out and they ask you, do you suffer from depression, anxiety, whatever, I would always check off anxiety because the insurance companies would ding you if you had depression.
Mm.
That's not the case anymore. But again, it's insidious. Mm. It has been.
Do anxiety and depression go hand in hand?
What a good question. Anxiety can lead to panic attacks, which can lead you straight into depression. Sure. Do they go hand in hand? I'm not sure I could answer that simply yes or no. There are people who just get anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very blessed that I don't suffer from depression now. It went away. Don't ask me how. Couldn't tell you. The first time, this is the third time. The first time was like for a few days. And it was like a miracle. The second time was like for a week, and I thought, oh, my God. Now it's been a few years. Do I get sad? Yes, sometimes very, very sad. But I can see where the edge of depression is, and sometimes I've walked right up to the edge, and I go, you know what, I'm not doing that today. And I step back because I've got the tools now to help myself recognize it and to help myself step back. And if people can start to be aware of what triggers them, for example, for me, once I was in therapy, we began to look at what the triggers are, and I started to realize that there's a couple of things I do that sent me straight over the edge, one of which was when I got depressed, I went down on the floor with my dog, sometimes in the fetal position, and that threw me straight over the edge if I was there for more than a couple minutes.
Hmm.
And a couple of years ago, a good friend of mine died suddenly, and I went down, first time in years. And after about a minute, I said, stop, get up. You need to get up. This is not going to do any good at all. And I got myself up and got moving. Now, a counterbalance to all of that is when I see I'm moving towards the edge, I tell my dog, we're going to go dance. And I go put on some upbeat, fun music. And he and I start dancing around the living room. He plays, I dance, and we have a great time. You cannot be depressed when you're dancing full out.
With a dog.
Physically, it's impossible. Yeah.
Especially
well,
dancing with a dog.
Or without.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, with a dog. That's right.
Dogs are great conduits to happiness, aren't they?
They really are. You know, he can tell when I'm getting very sad, and he comes right over. And it's wonderful because I call him my class clown. He will do anything to make me laugh. It's a wonderful depression buster. It's great.
Deborah, you say there's no one way to deal with depression. How's the scientific community feel about that? The psychological or psychiatric science on that? Do they feel there is one real way to deal with it? I mean, your book is based experientially, right?
Yes. Let me answer it this way. There are so many different kinds of psychology out there. There's so many different focuses of treatment. Some psychologists and psychiatrists do medication, some don't. Some psychologists do medication, many don't. There are psychologists that treat people through diet, which I found actually is a very an effective tool. Is it the only way? No. There are many things that work for different people that don't work for others. You know, at this point, I discovered something called Moringa, M-O-R-I-N-G-A. Turns out I have one in my backyard, but somebody told me years ago, you know, they take Moringa capsules. And I went, wow. Told a friend, she said, you got one right outside. So I go out and I pull some leaves off when I'm feeling blue, chew some up, and then I'm feeling better.
Oh, wow.
It's different things for different people.
I'm going to try that with the coca bush in my backyard. I'm kidding. Just kidding. Deborah's book, Deborah Atlas' book is You Aren't Depression's Victim. It's available Barnes & Noble and Amazon online.
And you can go to DeborahAtlas.com. Do you sell the book there as well?
Yes.
Well, thanks for talking to us today, Deborah.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Clark. I really appreciate that. This is a very important topic. It's its own kind of epidemic. It's a silent epidemic. And this book is about empowering people to be able to stand up to depression and take their lives back.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Deborah.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.